And thank you all to the high school students who are here today. Thank you for coming. I hope you enjoyed watching some of these arguments today. Welcome, counsel. And Marshall, when you're ready, you can call the next one.
The third case is A23-1094, State of Minnesota Respondent versus Stony Dream Allen Appellant.
All right, counsel, please take your time getting settled in. As you do so, I'll just run through some of the normal appellate rules, which you all know very well. But you'll each have 15 minutes for your argument. Appellant's counsel, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. As you both know, there's the buttons on the podium that you can adjust up and down. So feel free to get yourself settled. And when you're ready, appellant's counsel, you may start.
May it please the court, counsel. Sharon Jacks for appellant Stony Allen in this challenge to his assault sentences. The district court's ruling denying him probation was contrary to the law and the facts in the record. Whether you place the blame at the feet of the court or defense counsel, the result is the same. His sentences must be reversed. The district court abused its discretion when denying his motion for probation because it based that ruling on three critical misunderstandings of the law. The first was that the court felt it was prohibited from considering his young age and lack of criminal history. The court said, those are things I can't take into consideration. The court instead considered only the crime itself and the impact on the victim. That violates 40 years of precedent from this court and the Minnesota Supreme Court. That case law indicates that criminal history and an individual's age are two very important factors that can, in fact, be considered when ruling on a dispositional departure. There are a variety of other factors too that come into play, all that relate to the offender as an individual, as opposed to the severity of the offense. Those factors also supported probation in this case, and it demonstrated that Mr. Allen was particularly amenable to probation. Not only was he young and had no criminal history, he also had taken responsibility by pleading guilty. He had apologized multiple times during the PSI and at sentencing, demonstrating his remorse. He had demonstrated during over 2 years in the community that he could comply with the conditions that were imposed upon him. And it also demonstrated that he was, in fact, being rehabilitated during that time while he was receiving counseling from his pastor and another youth counselor who was present in the court that day but was not permitted to speak to the court or to testify about the details of the programming that they had been engaged in. He had many, many supporters there who demonstrated or were going to articulate, in addition, how they would have supported him in the community had he been given probation. And this is a case where probation itself found that he was a low risk to reoffend. Again, the court is supposed to consider the offender as an individual and whether prison is appropriate or serves the best interests of both the individual, Mr. Allen, and society.
I was gonna ask you, what would you say is your best argument and or best case that we should reverse and remand for resentencing, despite all the case law that we do have, of course, well established that a judge need not articulate why a presumptive sentence is given?
Yes. The best case, I mean, where the Supreme Court has done precisely that is Henham. I also am relying heavily on State versus Nix, because Nix is the case that defines what is an abuse of discretion. And in a number of the cases, if not 90% of the cases that you're referring to where you have affirmed, there hasn't been a decision where the court articulates on the record precisely why she is denying the motion, and that reason is contrary to the law. The fact is the court was applying the wrong standard. The court was applying the durational departure standard to a dispositional departure motion. And there is, as we cited in our case, multiple cases from both the Supreme Court and this court indicating that when the district court applies the wrong departure standard to a motion, that is an abuse of discretion and requires reversal. And the court relied on another incorrect understanding of the law when denying the departure here. The court indicated at the time she was sentencing Mr. Allen that he was eligible for the boot camp program. The court said, you are eligible for programs that will shorten this sentence if you agree to boot camp. That's the right decision for you. Go look at boot camp. The DOC can take you in that program based on youthful offender, no prior record. Well, that's objectively false. That violates the statute that defines who is eligible and who is not eligible for boot camp. And that statute says if you have an assault conviction, you are not eligible for boot camp. The court indicated that age and lack of criminal history were actually important facts that should determine the punishment that an individual should receive, but felt somehow that her hands were tied in sentencing him and that she couldn't consider those facts. Again, she said, those are things I can't take into consideration.
Ms. Jackson, I noticed the prosecutor made that same argument during the sentencing. I think he used the phrase that it's too serious of a crime and age, I think it was age or criminal history, I can't remember which, cannot be taken into account. And so the judge seemed to mirror that. Is that your understanding?
That's exactly right, Judge Slater. And what we have here is a situation where we have a defense attorney who completely dropped the ball, who did nothing to try to clarify for the court what the correct law was and what the standard was that she should be applying. The defense attorney didn't file a memo, which is standard practice in district court in Minnesota. You file a memo supporting your motion, and you attach statements from all of the supporters, and you give the judge the law, and you give the judge the facts that support your argument. If you're not going to submit the memorandum, which he had indicated to the judge at the plea hearing that he was going to do, at a minimum, you make those arguments at the hearing, and you clarify for the court, oh, it appears you're applying the wrong standard, Your Honor. In Minnesota, remember, we apply the TROG factors and factors that focus on the offender when we're trying to determine whether or not an individual should be placed on probation. So I do think that the court was misled by the prosecutor and defense attorney, and that is one of the reasons this is a rare case. This, honestly, in over 25 years that I've been handling these cases, was just shocking to me that there's three attorneys in the courtroom and none of them seem to know the basic law on what a court is to consider in order to decide whether or not to put someone on probation. And this, the court acknowledged, I know this was just one bad day in your life, but it was a very, very bad day. That fact alone is a trigger that perhaps this is a person who should be on probation. Yes, it was a horrible crime, but it was one day. And when you're looking at the offender as a whole, you don't look to one day. You look to their criminal history and how young they are. What was happening on that one day? Well, we know on that one day, before all of this occurred, he had been spending the last months caring for his girlfriend who was in a coma and then was in rehab that ultimately did not go well for her and she passed away. He was 18 years old at that time. And the judge questioned his mother when she explained that he was suffering a from some trauma at the time of the offense. There, the PSI is replete with his own personal statements about the trauma that he was going through. He repeatedly talked to and the PSI preparer about his emotional and psychological distress at that time. Does that justify his acts that day? Of course not. But it's one of the things that needs to be taken into account when determining whether or not to grant a dispositional departure. And that's in our brief, we point out there's not only the judge's reliance on misunderstandings of the law and the wrong standard. There's also, she seems to be confused about some of the facts. Again, is that defense counsel's fault or is that the judge's fault? Whoever is to blame, this sentence is unreasonable and inappropriate and shouldn't stand. She didn't understand that he had all of these conditions that he was complying with while he was out in the community. She never got a chance to hear from the pastor who was providing him with individual treatment or the social worker or community worker who was meeting with him. It sounds like from what we have here, individually and perhaps in some sort of group capacity. And his specialty was working with kids who were, had struggling with gun violence. Had the court heard from those people and not believed that she was not permitted to hear from them or that she was not permitted to call witnesses at a sentencing hearing, and then applied the correct law, the decision, there's a reasonable probability that this decision would have been different. And that's why the attorney here was ineffective and Mr. Allen was denied effective assistance of counsel. So we truly believe this is the rare case and we're asking this court to reverse outright based on the record that you have before you or at a minimum to remand to allow to both with instructions that the proper standard be applied here and to give Mr. Allen the opportunity to present these individuals' testimony or their statements in order that the court reach a fair and just decision.
Counsel, it seems like reversing outright would be a step too far for us to take because there are facts that would need to be weighed or do you have any cases that are on point?
In State versus Henham, the Supreme Court did that. I'd also point you to Rule 2805, which gives this court the authority as well as I think it's 244.11 gives the court the authority to set aside a sentence and to impose one that is appropriate and reasonable. And I think on this record, that could be done. Certainly if you feel the district court needs additional information and there is some indication here that there is even more positive information about this young man, we have to remember now he's been sitting in prison for almost a year at this point. And so it would obviously be a preference that you reverse outright. And I believe you have the statutory authority in the rules and authority and precedent to do that. But if you disagree, a remand would be appropriate here.
What would you agree, counsel, that if we agree with your argument on issue one, we would need not address issue two, the ineffective
assistance? That's correct. The sentence was unlawful, whether or there was an abuse of discretion in imposing it, or whether Mr. Allen was denied effective assistance of counsel. Either way, we end up in the same place.
Thank you.
And for these reasons, we ask that this is the rare case that where this court should reverse and remand. Or reverse and or remand. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for your rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, when you're ready, feel free to get settled in and begin when you're ready.
May it please the court. My name is Todd Zettler. I represent respondent, the state of Minnesota. The standard of review in this case gives the district court not unbridled, but nearly unbridled discretion. It is an exceptionally deferential standard of review for sentencing cases. It is the extremely rare case that gets reversed and remanded, and virtually no case ever simply reversed. I'm unaware of any court of appeals case doing that before. That's kind of an extremely extraordinary request. The district court in this case did not clearly abuse that discretion. And the case law consistently says that departures are to be extremely rare. Soto explains that, again, not unbridled, but the district court has that incredible discretion.
Mr. Zettler, on the standard, how do we know whether a court abused discretion if the court didn't exercise discretion?
Well, normally—
By that, I mean, that's the argument, and the transcript certainly supports that argument, that the judge said specifically, I cannot consider criminal history, age. Would you agree that was an error of law?
That's really the key in this case. It's a short sentencing transcript, relatively. It was a rowdy sentencing. People were interrupting and kind of out of order. But if the district court
was at the end after she pronounced her sentence, right?
And even before, you know, different people were trying to interrupt and say different things. But if the district court was wrong on the law and didn't consider things that she should have considered, that would be a case that you would reverse and remand and give the court the chance to do it again and do it right.
Isn't that
usually you
here?
Don't have that, because usually the district court doesn't say anything. They just pronounce the sentence and it's presumed correct because it's within the guidelines. And so all of that beneficial standard of review applies. And initially, when you cherry pick out of the sentencing what Judge Lennon said in that one sentence, it does say, I can't consider those things. And so when you look at that, you think, well, geez, this is that case. We should send this back and she should be given another opportunity. But when you look at it in context, she's talking to the family and explaining, this is what happens in these cases. This is the kind of things that I can look at. This is what the guidelines take into account. I'm not standing in judgment of whether Stoney Allen is a good person or a bad person. That's not my job. I'm sentencing and I'm looking at these things. So I think that it does not indicate that she didn't think she could consider those. And also you need to—
Despite her saying she couldn't.
Well, but she didn't just say that. She didn't just say, I can't consider that.
Well,
she said that in the context of, here's what I look at. Here's what the guidelines take into consideration. Here's what I'm finding. Here's what I'm not finding. I'm not finding that Stoney Allen is just a bad man.
But what I'm getting at, first we had, would you agree, an error of law and then a statement by the prosecutor saying you cannot look at age, criminal history. It's just too serious of a crime. Would you agree that encompasses an error of law, because in a dispositional departure, those are precisely the things you look at. You don't look at the crime. You look at the age, criminal history, remorse, all those factors.
Right, and that is the difference between the durational and the dispositional departures.
So it started with an error with the prosecuting attorney. Appellant's concern, his defense attorney was silent about it and didn't correct. And then the judge repeats that. How else do we read that as not exercising discretion and affirmatively suggesting that the district court cannot? I'm not fully understanding how we read that and somehow put it into any other context.
Well, if you read that and find that the district court is simply wrong as a matter of law, then that is an abuse of discretion. But I think that you can also read that, and if you read it all in context, that's not exactly what the district court did. The district court was explaining, this is the kind of things that we do. This is why I can't and won't depart in this case, and ultimately didn't depart in this case. And the district court had all kinds of reasons why she was not going to depart here. And keep in mind, this is a very experienced district court judge with experience as a prosecutor in Hennepin County and as a judge in Scott County for years and was on the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. So it's not like she's inexperienced and doesn't know the law. She does. This was a rowdy, out of control sentencing where she was trying to proceed and hold it in a reasonable fashion in the middle of a busy calendar.
But even with that, so we don't get to see what was happening in the courtroom, right? We just get to see what the transcript says.
And the transcript, though, does show that when you end with the mother swearing and others interrupting.
Yes, after sentences were imposed, there's a lot that happened, for sure. But in terms of what the transcript says of what she thinks she can and cannot consider, it's pretty clear that she's saying, these are things I cannot take in consideration when making this decision. So, you know, I understand your argument. You could potentially read that a different way. But based on the cold transcript, why not just send it back? And if the judge does the same thing but considers the correct factors, it comes back up here and we have a better record of that.
And if you read that transcript in context and find that that's exactly what the district court did, then that's a proper result.
Okay.
And it seems that that's what the court is inclined based upon the transcript. But I would also just point out that this was a case where she was well aware of this defendant and had been dealing with him for years. This was a case that went on for years. Multiple attorneys have represented Mr. Allen, and this attorney represented him for over a year prior to this. When Mr. Allen pled guilty, this was a case where he pled not very guilty. The plea had to be sort of pulled from him. He did not want to admit that he had a gun. He did not want to admit that he brandished a gun. But he received an extraordinarily good plea agreement in this case. And they're not asking to withdraw his plea. They're not asking to go back and undo anything like that. They don't want to resurrect the dismissed aggravated robbery. They don't want to resurrect the other charges. They simply want a new sentencing on this case. But even those factors, when you consider that he was, when you talk about the trauma that was discussed and that was mainly presented was the trauma of not having a high school graduation. There was the girlfriend as well, but really it was the high school graduation that he didn't have. And it was the trauma of Stoney Allen being on probation. He was the victim. When you read that transcript, Stoney Allen.
Doesn't that belittle a bit, though? The record indicates it was a long-term relationship and that she had been in the coma, and he's bringing her mother to the hospital. I think the graduation, well put, that is a whole different category, but that seems to belittle the effect that would have on him or anybody, doesn't it?
And the district court judge asked him about that and said, well, how did you get this gun that you didn't really want to admit that you have? And even at sentencing, didn't want to admit that he had. Well, he had it because he was at the hospital seeing his girlfriend. He couldn't really explain how he had the gun, how it ended up in his car, how he had the car but still needed a ride. Things weren't tracking even at sentencing, and the judge certainly noticed that and is entitled to notice that. And finally, trauma is not the trauma of a defendant being on probation and on trial. That's not trauma that is counted as trauma. And that's what a lot of the discussion at sentencing was about, was the trauma of Stoney Allen being on probation, Stoney Allen being on pretrial release, Stoney Allen and his family seeing him charged with a crime. He didn't believe he was guilty. His family didn't believe he was guilty. They were angry about the situation. And that's what was coming out at sentencing. Again, I would ask this court to affirm and find that the district court did not clearly abuse her discretion by imposing the presumptive guideline sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for your rebuttal.
I think I counted 5 times at the sentencing hearing where Mr. Allen apologized for his acts that day. So we would disagree that the sentencing hearing was all about him denying that he had committed a crime and somehow seeking a probationary sentence because he hadn't done anything wrong. A number of the facts, you know, proposed by opposing counsel we disagree with, but I'll let the record speak for itself. I'd just like to clarify one point of law, and that is the case law doesn't say that this court will reverse a presumptive sentence in an extremely rare case. It says that it will do so in a rare case. And as we indicated, there is Supreme Court cases where they've done that. There are also unpublished cases from this court where you've done this. There's State versus Christensen. There's State versus Rodriguez-Martinez. These are unpublished cases, not cited in our brief. They're not controlling, but they do indicate that there are rare cases, and this is one of them. Therefore, we ask that you reverse. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, counsel, for the arguments today and your briefs as well argued. And the case is submitted, and we will get an opinion out in the statutory time frame. With that, that is the end of our calendar today, and so we will be in recess. Thank you.
All rise.